Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome back to another Riding for a Lifetime podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about a subject that probably the majority of you are going to have some experience with, and that is low back pain. I would say that it is way more common for you to reach that 40 plus rider category and have some sort of low back pain than not. And it's definitely one of the most common things that riders suffer from, both on and off the bike. So first off, when I say low back pain, you know, what am I talking about? And this is a spectrum here that low back pain refers to. And you can have everything from like the debilitating kind that is requiring perhaps consideration of surgery or pain medication to control, all the way to the just occasional flare-up. You know, if you move the wrong way or rode a little long, then maybe your low back's a little sore the next day. And so I would consider anything on that spectrum to be low back pain. So you don't have to be suffering from like crippling low back pain on a consistent basis for you to need to worry about this, because the thing is low back pain, if you ignore it, it's usually going to get worse and get to the point to where you have to pay attention to it. So no matter where it is on the spectrum, you don't want to wait until it becomes something that you're at the doctor discussing potential surgery before you're like, yeah, I've got low back pain. The earlier that you can recognize and address it, the easier time you're going to have helping to improve it and perhaps get rid of it and keep it from coming back. So again, this can refer to something that happens on or off the bike, whether it's something that's constant or is kind of a flare up, depending upon what you do. But if any of this happens to you, then hopefully I've got some advice for you that can help you out, because it is something that can ruin the good time that mountain biking is supposed to provide, especially if you've got low back pain while you're riding. And in extreme cases, it can make people consider quitting riding. I mean, there definitely have been people out there that have quit riding because they're in so much pain and they can't find a solution. And you know, that's just the best thing that they can do. And so hopefully it doesn't get to that point with you and or anywhere near that, and we can help that prevent that with some of this advice here. Another thing that can be frustrating with low back pain is that it doesn't always have a consistent, predictable pattern. And there can often be a kind of a mystery as to the underlying cause. Perhaps it's related to a previous injury, either to the low back, or maybe you injured something else that's created a compensation that you're starting to feel in your low back, or, you know, maybe it's just this, you know, nondescript. I mean, there's actually been studies that have shown that your happiness at work, right? Like your mindset can actually play a role in low back pain. So it's, you know, there's a lot of different things that could be causing it. Obviously, you know, mindset's one of those things that we're not going to get into here, but is something that you should be, paying attention to. A bad attitude and just kind of a negative outlook in general can definitely affect you in a lot of different ways. But I guess my point is that, again, there's no consistent pattern. It's not like, you know, the cold or the flu where it's like, okay, yeah, we know exactly what you got. We know kind of what's going on here. We have some idea of how to treat it or a course of action to take with it. It can be a mystery as to exactly what's going on, which can make it even more frustrating. So just for myself, like, I have experience with low back pain, both as a trainer. I've worked with, hundreds, if not thousands of riders at my training facility when I had one here in Grand Junction, helping people through online coaching. You know, a lot of riders definitely had low back pain. And so I've helped a lot of people over the years overcome and help improve their low back pain. And I personally myself have suffered from low back pain. I got a little stupid at one point trying to deadlift too much weight. You know, it's one of those do what I say, not as I do sort of operations where I train, you know, with my own training, as the joke goes. But I wasn't listening to my own advice and was pushing things too hard, and I strained my lower back. And luckily, you know, there was no disc damage or anything like that, but it definitely tweaked it bad. I was out, with low back pain and, you know, unable to ride, really hurt to walk, a lot of time laying on the couch to recover. And to this day, it affects me as far as like needing to really stay on top of my mobility and, you know, a lot of these things in this list that I'm about to go over with you are spawned from personal experience as well, and my own personal experience of trying to figure out what is going to help me just be as pain-free as possible. And again, I'm one of those people that I wouldn't necessarily say that I have low back pain and that it's not this like constant thing and I can ride and I can perform, but it definitely, like I said, if I don't stay on top of it, it can start to become a problem. And so, these strategies come from both helping a lot of other riders and also myself, overcome low back pain. So unfortunately, it's something that I have personal experience with. So a lot of the things that I'm going to go over here, aren't your typical advice. I think like the most common piece of advice for people with low back pain is to stretch or mobilize your hip flexors, right? There's this idea that the pelvis is tilted forward and that's putting strain on the low back, and that the pelvis is tilted forward because the hip flexors are tight. And so if we're able to stretch the hip flexors and the quads as well to some degree, then that's going to help loosen that up and help the pelvis rotate into a more natural position. And that'll help take care of low back pain. And, you know, as you'll see, like that's definitely a very small part of the overall picture, but it's a very incomplete part of it. And so if you have tried this advice and it hasn't worked for you, then just know that it's not your fault. There's not something wrong with you. It's just incomplete advice, and that there's more to it than just increasing your hip flexor mobility or doing some quad and hip flexor stretches. So I do want to say before we dive into this, into some specific suggestions, you do need to make sure that there isn't something medically wrong with your back. So make sure you have a doctor or some sort of medical professional check it out and make sure there isn't something specific going on. I mean, if you have a pinched nerve or a bulging disc, again, it's not that some of these things can't help with that, but you definitely want to make sure that you are following your doctor's advice and running anything that you're going to add to that advice by them, just to make sure that it's not going to cause any more problems than it is actually helping. But again, if there isn't something specifically wrong with your lower back and it just hurts, at any point in time, then there may be a few things you can do to help improve the situation. So there's a list. I started this list. I wanted to do like your classic, 3 to 5 things or whatever. But as I started making the list, I realized that actually I have about 8 tips for you, and that again, I didn't want to leave anything out just because it's not as nifty and neat as top 3 tips to cure low back pain or whatever. So I've got 8 things here. Just going to run down the list real quick, and then we're going to go into each one individually. So, and again, these aren't necessarily in any particular order, right? Like number 1 isn't number 1, and the last one isn't like the least important. That's not how these are listed out. These are just really just kind of how they came to my mind as I was thinking about it. So number 1 is be aware of your breathing. Number 2 is improve your hip flexor strength with isometric exercises. And that's hip flexor strength, right? We'll get into why that's important. Improve your hip mobility, improve spinal mobility, have a warm-up routine and a pre-ride routine, stand up on the trail for high tension efforts, use flat pedals, and then finally, use a strength training program that creates a well-balanced body. So number 1, be aware of your breathing. Your breathing influences a lot of things and has a lot of effects on your body, including your lower back. There have been several studies that have found a link between bad breathing habits and low back pain. This means that you could be doing everything else right and still have low back pain if you have bad breathing habits. And breathing is a really low-hanging fruit that can make a big difference. So you may as well make it part of your overall strategy. It's free. It's not super complicated. And so if you're not, kind of thinking about your breathing and making sure that that is something that's not at least, that it's not optimized, then it could definitely help you out. So good breathing will help stabilize the midsection and reinforce good posture. And in my opinion, that link between bad breathing habits and low back pain, this is where that comes from. Because if you aren't breathing properly, then you're not able to stabilize your core, especially under load properly. And poor core stability has also been linked to low back pain. So it may not be the breathing itself that's causing the low back pain, but it's actually the poor core stability that is caused by the bad breathing that's causing the low back pain. So, but it's going to be tough to really fix that core stability if these bad breathing habits are working against you. So you want to be aware of and practice good breathing habits on the bike, in the gym, and during your everyday life. And you can optimize your breathing pretty easily. I've got several posts on my site at bikejames.com. If you go there and do a search for breathing, I'm sure there'll be several articles. I'll link in the show notes to a post that will also go over this stuff. But in general, you want to make sure that you are using your diaphragm to breathe. So you're breathing deep and low into the lungs. You're not chest breathing, and that you are not over breathing. And over breathing is where you're breathing more than is necessary. And so if you're using your diaphragm, that is like number one, right? And a lot of other things are going to fall into place. And so I'd say that's kind of the number one habit. And this is where like the idea of belly breathing comes in. So if you like the number one assessment that I do with people, there's several things to do that you can do to assess your breathing on several different levels. And it's good to know what those things are and know how to optimize your breathing, because it can help improve your cardio, help improve your mindset, help improve your strength and mobility. Again, there's a lot of things that breathing affects. But the number one thing is breathing with your diaphragm. And so if you just place your hand on your belly, just a little bit above your belly button, and you place another hand on your chest, and when you breathe in, you want to pay attention to what happens with those hands. And if the hand on your belly is pushing out and you feel pressure pushing out against that hand, and the hand on your chest is staying still, it's not moving, then you've got the basic foundational thing of using your diaphragm going there. And so if the opposite happens and you're breathing in and you don't really feel any expansion of your belly, you don't feel any pushing out of your hand, and you feel your hand on your chest moving up and down, that is chest breathing. And so that's a bad breathing habit, and again, can destabilize the core and lead to a lot of different negative effects on your body from a health and performance standpoint. And so if nothing else, just make sure you're trying to breathe with your diaphragm and not your chest. And so, but again, if you're doing that, then it'll just kind of make sure that that's not part of the problem. The second thing is to strengthen the hip flexors with isometric exercises. Now, this recommendation is probably a bit of a surprise to some riders, because again, the traditional way of looking at this is that our hip flexors are tight, and so that's causing, you know, the pelvis to tilt forward, and so we don't want to do anything to add more tension to those hip flexors, like strength training, and we want to actually decrease that tension through stretching. And again, that's I thought that way for a long time, and unfortunately, I held myself back and people that I was working with through that train of thought by not realizing that just because your hip flexors are tight doesn't mean that they're strong. These are two totally different things, and that strong hip flexors are actually going to be less tight, because excessive tension is the enemy of strength. And improving the strength is actually going to help improve with the tension levels, which can help with that mobility. And the best thing to do is to use isometric exercises. And isometric exercises are great because you're creating tension without movement. And so again, you don't have to worry about potentially irritating a low back injury even worse through movement, especially weighted movement. And so, the hip flexor, there's a couple exercises that I'll link to that'll help with this. But the number one is the single leg hip flexor stretch. And I've got a post on bikejames.com. I think it's called is this the best MTB specific exercise for low back pain or something like that. And I go over this movement, but it's basically you lay on the floor and you have one leg straight and you bring the other leg, the knee up towards your chest to about 90 degrees. And then you use your hand on that same side against the top of your knee to prevent you from raising the knee forward. So your visual is you're trying to pull your knee as high as you can, like get it up to your chest or your armpit, and you're using your hand to stop that from happening. And I like to use a technique called ramping isometrics. And so you start with the first 30 seconds at 50% effort in the next 30 seconds at 80% effort, and then finally another 30 seconds at 100% effort. And it's surprisingly tough to do. And it's but again, it's not only going to help improve your mobility, but it'll help improve your standing pedaling position and power as well. And so it's a great exercise overall. There's a few other exercises like the glute bridge, isometric glute bridge, the isometric deep squat, and an isometric lunge that also help with that hip flexor mobility. And again, like if you have tight hip flexors and are lacking mobility, then it's tough to get down into a deep squat. And so, for example, and as I improved my isometric deep squat, I found that my hip mobility was improving. And that's because my hip flexors were being forced to relax and mobilize so that I could be more efficient in that deep squat position. And so there's a lot of different ways to go about helping your hip flexors through stretching. And so again, start wherever you're at. Like I said, I mentioned like doing like, you know, 3 rounds of 30, ramping up from 50% to 80% to 90%. So that's 90 seconds total. If you find that that's just really difficult, man, just start with where you're at, right? Like just hold it as hard as you can for 30 seconds. And then just get a feel for it and then work up from that. But if you do that exercise several times a week, I mean, at a minimum of one, but you know, if you're doing it like 3 or 4 times a week, then that will help improve that strength and range of motion, and help with the issue. And so again, the idea of improving the strength through isometric exercises, again, is one of those not super common things, but something that I've found to help myself and riders that I've been working with. The next thing is improve your hip mobility. And this is where the hip flexor stretch comes in, right? It's not that you don't want to do that. It's just a very small part of the overall equation, like I said. And so you do most likely need to improve your hip mobility. I just suggest that you think about the fact that your hips have 4 general directions of movement, right? And so you want to do something that works on all 4 of those things. And so I do think that good old static stretching and using your breathing to help you relax into the stretch is a great way to go about it. There's 4 stretches that I like, the quad and hip flexor stretch. I think a lot of people have seen that, where you've got like your rear foot up on a box or a chair or something, your knees on the floor, creating a quad stretch, and you can, you know, lean forward, which will put a stretch on your hip flexor. The hamstring stretch would, you know, good old fashioned, just sit on the floor and lean forward and grab your toes, right? That's a good stretch there. You can do it single leg or both legs at the same time. A glute stretch, you could use like the pigeon pose from yoga. You could also lay on your back and place the ankle of one foot on the top of the knee of the other leg, and it creates a little hole you can reach through and pull your knee forward. That'll put a stretch on your glute. And then finally, that butterfly stretch, where you're laying on the, or sitting on the ground, right? And you got your feet together and your legs in that butterfly position, and just, pushing down with your elbows to help improve the range of motion there in the groin area. And so those are the 4 basic areas that you want to focus on with your mobility with the hips. So hold the stretch for as long as you can. I mean, 15 seconds is, you know, probably about a minimum. Obviously, if, you know, I would say doing anything is better than nothing, but I'd say at least trying to hold for 15 seconds. But you could hold up to 5+ minutes with these stretches, and there'd probably be some benefits from it. I'm sure there's a point of diminishing returns, but in general, I'm doing my own stretching routine. I try to stretch for at least 30 seconds, up to 2 minutes. If I have the time, then I'll hold each stretch for 2 minutes. And stretching is something that you want to do is on a very regular basis. And so 3 to 7 days a week with your stretching, specifically these 4 stretches here, right? Like the thing with stretching is, if you're trying to stretch your whole body and you've got like this 45, 60 minute routine and you're trying to do that several days a week, that may be a little difficult for you from a time perspective. So something you can do is just choose the 1 or 2, perhaps up to 3 or 4, right? But just pick a few stretches that you need to focus on. You've identified, like, this is my weak link, right? And so if you've identified that, man, I really need to work on that, you go through those 4 stretches that I just described and pick the 2 that you feel the tightest in, right? Maybe it's that quad hip flexor stretch and the glute stretch. And so, well, those are the ones that you make sure that you do every day. And then when you have more time, you can add in some other stretches and have like 1 or 2 days a week where you're doing like a full body routine. But again, don't let trying to do this big long routine become a hindrance. Like one of the keys to a fitness program is to, you know, create as little friction as possible, get rid of the friction points. And so if a large stretching routine is part of the friction that's keeping you from doing it, then how can we reduce that friction? And cutting down to those essential things is one of the easiest ways to do that. So in the same vein is the next tip is improving your spinal mobility. And another part of the low back is your spine, right? So it's not just the hips, but the hips and the spine, especially that low back area together, are what create the problem area. And so you do want to have a spine that is able to move freely and articulate. You want each vertebrae, each joint in the spine to be able to move independently and freely. And what happens is we get sticking points. We get two or three that are kind of tight and stuck together, and that creates excessive stress on the spine in certain areas. So having a spine that moves freely, that and also a spine that you can get tight and protect under load, like that's the ultimate goal. It's not one or the other. And so if you've got a low back, sometimes you get a little gun shy with moving, right? And we get so focused on, okay, I'm going to do things to stabilize my lower back and mobilize my hips, and we take it so far that we actually get a stiff spine, and that can cause problems as well. And so there's a few movements that I really have found help me. Excuse me. The first one is the sun salutation from yoga, right? This is like standing up with your feet together, and then starting with like leaning back, kind of like a slight back bend, and then rolling forward, like tucking your chin, and think about rolling each vertebrae one at a time on the way down into a forward bend stretch, and then reverse that and try to think about stacking each vertebrae one at a time on top of each other, and then opening, you know, your chin and leaning back into the back bend again. And so that sun salutation is a really great spinal mobility movement. The other one, I'm sure there's a more professional name for it. I call it the twisty slap. And this is like a Qigong type exercise. You'll see this in some different, movement-based martial arts. And so this is where you're standing and you are twisting from side to side. And again, I'll provide links to some videos of these in the show notes. But you're basically letting your arms just hang freely as you turn. And, you know, like you're looking behind you, and as you look behind you, your arms kind of fly around, and then you end up bringing them and slapping your chest in the front, and the backhand in the back comes and slaps like the kidney on the opposite side. And then you reverse that. You look the other way and you twist, and that'll, your arms just kind of float freely. And then you pull them into that slap where you're slapping the chest and the kidney. So again, I call them the twisty slaps. But that's a really good movement as well. And then finally the stick windmill. And this is basically a windmill exercise with a broomstick or something on your back, holding it like you're doing a barbell squat. And this is I've written a lot about this movement. I think this is a core foundational movement for mountain bikers. This is the movement behind cornering on your bike. And so the better and more freely you can do this movement, the easier time you're going to have cornering. And so a lot of times people are struggling with their cornering, not because they don't know the 10 steps of cornering, it's because they lack the movement potential to actually create an effective solution to the problem of cornering on their mountain bike. And so, be sure to avoid pain while you're doing these movements, and use your breathing to help stabilize your spine and improve your range of motion. Again, back to that breathing thing, it helps with a lot of different areas. If you don't feel comfortable with spinal twists, so like the twisty slaps or even like the stick windmill, you're not comfortable with, then just start with the sun salutations. They're a great place to start, and just do that on a daily basis. I do these on a daily basis. They don't take that long to do, and my back feels better after doing them. And if I don't do them, then that's when I can start to feel like, oh, I'm starting to get some low back pain, stiffness, and pain. And so You know, if I'm feeling stiff at all, and then, you know, this is like part of my warm-up routine, which is kind of segues into the next point or next tip, which is to have a warm-up routine and also a pre-ride mobility routine. Quality movement is pain-free movement. And so ultimately your goal is to practice quality pain-free movement when you train and ride. And having a warm-up and pre-ride routine that focuses on improving your hip and spinal mobility will help you have higher quality movement during your training and riding. And this is going to lead to less pain, both in the moment and down the road. So, you know, with a lot of people will associate this with a workout. So having some sort of warm-up before you work out makes sense. But also doing something before you jump on your bike makes a lot of sense, especially as we get older, right? It's not as cool as pulling up to the parking lot and getting out and your wind's, you know, hair's blowing in the wind and you put your bike helmet on and just jump on your bike and go off and shred the gnar, but sitting in your car and, or even just spinning, right? Say you ride to the trailhead and you're doing a lot of seated pedaling, that will cause stiffness in your low back and hips. And so it'll decrease that movement quality. And so doing a few mobility movements, like, you know, my favorite are the sun salutations, the twisty slaps, and then like a bodyweight squat, dropping down into just a bodyweight squat and hanging out down there. And then finally, the windmill, you can do a version of that with your body. And then finally, like a reverse lunge to a high knee. So taking a big step back in a reverse lunge and then stepping forward and pulling your knee up to at least 90 degrees will help just kind of get things moving well and get things firing. But especially those kind of mobility movements, doing those to help loosen up the spine and the hips will help as well. So on the trail, a couple things that will help. One is stand up for high tension efforts. And the posture you put a lot of tension on matters. Standing postures are better for high tension efforts because you have better posture, right? You've got better chest position for breathing. You have better core position. You get more hip extension. There's a co-contraction at the knee at the bottom of the pedal stroke, right? Like when you're standing up, you get to the bottom of the pedal stroke, one, you get full knee extension, and also your quad and hamstring co-contract to stabilize the knee. And that doesn't happen when you're sitting down. Again, I know this isn't about knee pain, but this will also help with knee pain if you deal with that as well. There's also less stress on the neck to look up, right? When you're sitting down, you have to look up higher to see the same distance down the trail versus when you are standing up and you're in a little bit more natural posture. So seated pedaling is fine for low tension, like easy efforts, efforts that you could, you know, use as recovery between harder efforts. But the position and posture you're in is not good for creating a lot of tension. And I know this goes against a lot. Whenever I mention this, man, like people's eyes start bugging out of their head because they're told very early on that standing pedaling is quote unquote less efficient, right? And that you need to sit down as much as possible and avoid standing pedaling like the plague because it is so inefficient. You're just going to blow through your energy so quickly and you need to sit and spin. And you also need to sit down on climbs because that's what keeps weight on your rear tire. So first off, like seated pedaling, it feels easier, but easier doesn't mean more efficient, right? It just means easier. Efficiency is a measurement of how much work is produced compared to the energy used to create it. And in a lot of cases, standing pedaling is actually more efficient. Standing pedaling is a skill, right? And so as you do it more, you're going to get more efficient at it. And so a lot of people, they stand up and they haven't done it much. And they're like, man, this is really hard, and immediately give up. And it's like, no, man, the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. So the more, you know, you're going to get to the point where it doesn't feel as hard as it does at first. But again, the idea of efficiency is context specific. So for example, on a technical climb where you've got to use skill and weight shifts and, you know, to get up and over and around obstacles, man, you're going to be way better off standing up to do that than you are sitting down. But again, you know, this leads into the next one, which is keeping weight on the rear tire. which isn't really, you know, it's not really your goal. Like, it's not weight that you want to have on your rear tire. It is, because if it was, then Clydesdale riders, like the largest, heaviest riders, would never spin out on climbs. They've got the most weight on their rear tire, and yet they spin out, right? So obviously it's not a matter of weight. There's something else going on there. And what it is, it's weight to pressure. And so if you want pressure, which is weight used actively, think about like when you're standing on a bathroom scale and without like actually jumping up, you just kind of like get heavy and push down into the scale and you can make the scale move, right? Like, so your weight didn't change. You're still the same weight, but you were able to make that scale jump up and for a moment and show more weight, because that's pressure. You used weight actively. You used your weight to press down into the scale and create pressure. And so that's the same thing that you're wanting to do, both at your feet at the pedals, which is also what transfers that into the rear tire. And so it's pressure, not weight, that you're looking for. And as far as like, we've all seen people stand up and pedal uphill. So obviously it's not this like, you know, you have to sit down to create weight and pressure on your rear tire. Cause we've seen it happen with, everyone listening to this has seen someone stand up and pedal up something. And so, you know, it's obviously a skill that you can learn how to do. You need your weight in a area to be able to put pressure into your rear tire. And that area is roughly the same area as where your butt is when you're sitting down, but you can lower the seat, place yourself in the same basic position, and be able to apply weight and pressure through your rear tire as efficiently, if not more efficiently. I mean, there's just so many advantages to standing pedaling. I mean, I've got a whole podcast on standing pedaling, so go check that out if this is the first time you're hearing this advice. But the idea of standing up is going to be way, way, way better for your body. And a lot of riding related low back pain is from too much reliance on seated pedaling, and breaking away from it will increase your performance and help decrease your pain. So stand up more, especially high tension, hard efforts. You know, when you're having to create tension through your body to keep moving, or, you know, to keep things going, like that's a high tension effort. And so you want to have like this internal meter that when you switch into high tension mode, you stand up. You go back into low tension mode. You know, sometimes there's times to stand up, right? But that's when you can sit down and recover. And then you stand up for the high tension efforts. You sit down for the easy recovery efforts. That's the best way to use both positions. So another piece of advice is to use flat pedals. This isn't about which pedal system is the highest performance. I'll argue this, right? I've got plenty of stuff out there saying that flat pedals can be just as good, if not better, than clipless pedals, just because a lot of people at the highest levels use a piece of equipment. Doesn't necessarily mean that that's the best. It just means that that's what everybody's using, right? And things can change as knowledge and stuff changes. But even if we're going to say that the highest levels of competition and the highest levels of performance, that perhaps clipless pedals have some sort of advantage, which makes some sort of argument for including them in your riding, even though you shouldn't be using them all the time. This isn't about that. It's about which system is healthier for your body, right? Now, as a 40 plus year old rider, odds are super, super high that you don't pay your bills based on your riding performance. And it's longevity that's a priority for you as well. And so flat pedals force you to, one, use a more natural pedal stroke. This is gonna place less stress on the hips and not allow you to unnaturally pull up with the hip flexors, which puts stress on the lower back. So again, if you're doing the sit and spin, you're trying to pull up on the backstroke, man, you are really jacking yourself up from a couple different ways. One, we talked about standing being better for your body. So if you're sitting in these high tension efforts, and then as part of your high tension effort, you're pulling up with your hip flexor, which is attached through to the low back area. And every time you're pulling with the hip flexor, you're actually tugging and pulling and creating tension on the low back. Man, you are just hammering yourself from a bunch of different angles. And so that is not good for your body. The other thing that flat pedals do is it allows for variability in your foot position and pedal stroke that you can't get when you're locked into the pedal with your foot in the same exact position every time you ride. There's this weird thing in cycling where we're told that you want to find the perfect foot position, and then you want to repeat that exact same foot position every single time. But the reality is that variability has been found to correlate, variability in movement, right? This has been found to correlate to fewer injuries and lower injury potentials. And the current theory is that this idea of perfect repeatable movement, it's not only not really possible, but it's not desired for long-term health. And so flat pedals are going to help out in that as well, because every time you put your foot on the pedal, there's going to be a little variability. The pedal stroke has a little variability because of that. And those little micro variabilities are what are going to help keep you like decrease the stress on the lower body and help keep you healthy. So they're going to, like I said, going to allow for more natural and more variable movement and pedal stroke. And when you couple that with standing pedaling, man, that can make a huge impact on your lower back pain. At the risk of this sounding like an infomercial, I do want to say that the Catalyst pedals that I designed, they take this concept to its full conclusion, and they create the most natural support possible for your foot, which is going to further decrease the pain and power and performance stuff that you're going to get from flat pedals. And so one of the most common pieces of feedback that we get from riders who use the Catalyst pedal, which you can find out more about at pedalinginnovations.com, one of the most common things we hear back is pain relief. Low back pain, knee pain, ankle, Achilles, tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, like all sorts of lower back and lower body issues will improve greatly, if not go away, once people start riding the Catalyst pedals, because of the natural foot support, the fact that it supports your foot in a much more natural way. The length of the platform attaches both ends of the arch, which is how your foot's designed to function if it's not actually coming off of what it's on, right? So again, I don't want to go too deep into the science. I got a lot of different stuff out there explaining it, but this is the pedal's based on actual science and movement principles, not on tradition and marketing hype. And so, flat pedals are better than clipless pedals, and Catalyst pedals are the best flat pedals you can get. So if you are looking to get a flat pedal as part of your low back pain, helping with low back pain or helping to prevent low back pain, then check those out. 30-day money-back guarantee. All right, now it's sounding like an infomercial. I apologize. So let's move on. So the last piece of advice is to use a strength training program that creates a well-balanced body. And I say that because odds are pretty high that if you have low back pain, then you probably haven't consistently been following a strength training program that does this, especially if you've been riding a lot and neglecting strength training. Or, like I said, this kind of falls into two categories. One, you haven't been doing strength training, or two, you have been doing strength training, but unfortunately, it creates a lot of stress on the lower back. And programs like where you're doing a lot of circuits and you're trying to turn strength training into some sort of endurance training, or you're trying to do things to build work capacity. Like these things can, as you're fatigued, like one, those aren't the best ways to build strength. And two, it, again, quality movement is what you're after. And the more fatigued you are and the more you're stress you're putting yourself under, the more likely that movement quality is going to break down. And the more you're moving with less than high quality movement, the higher the odds, or the higher your chances of having low back pain come about because of that are. And so, again, strength training should be about getting stronger. Cardio training should be about improving your endurance, and neither one of those things should be done in a way that takes away from your ability to ride. And if they're causing low back pain, then they certainly are. So whether you've been skipping out on strength training, or you've been doing something that is focused way too much on circuits and, Metcons and trying to build work capacity or whatever, then, again, CrossFit's probably the most popular example, but there's definitely a lot of different workout styles out there that have you using like deadlifts and squats and Olympic lifts and things like that as part of these cardio building, work capacity building circuits. And those can be a recipe for disaster for you, especially as you're getting older. You can get away with a lot of stupid stuff when you're young. But as we get older, we got to start being a little smarter about stuff. So I did a podcast that I'll link to on strength training basics for the 40-plus-year-old rider that goes over some principles that you can use to evaluate either designing your own program or evaluating another program to use. And again, you can figure out what you need in a good strength training program. But as you get older, this is more and more important, right? Strength training is a must as a 40-plus-year-old rider. So that's it. That's the my low back pain tips there. Low back pain is about much more than just stretching your hip flexors, right? Hopefully you're starting to see that now. And by following this advice, you can get your low back pain under control and start to move in a better direction with how you move on and off the bike. And so that's kind of the other flip side of this is quality movement is also high performance movement. And so as you improve your movement quality, then you're not only going to take stress off the low back and help improve that, but you're also going to help improve your ability to move on the bike and improve your performance there. So anyways, hopefully you guys have found this advice helpful. Again, maybe it's all of it. Maybe it's a few things here and there that help you. But again, if you are suffering from low back pain, especially if you've tried the quote unquote, you know, normal things, and then trying some of these other things might help as well. So if you have any questions or comments or anything about this, certainly let me know. You can hit me up at james@bikejames.com. I'm always happy to help there. Make sure that you like and subscribe to however you're consuming this content, whether you're checking out the YouTube channel or podcast. Those likes and subscribes definitely help the algorithm so that other people can find out what's going on. At least that's what I'm told. Make sure that you go to bikejames.com and sign up for the newsletter. If you haven't already done that, you get a free workout program when you do that. So if you don't have a strength training program, it's a good way to get started. And I send out weekly updates when I do new podcasts and also, you know, new content and stuff that I put out. So that's the best way to keep up on what I'm doing. While you're there, I've got a lot of different free reports. So stuff on kettlebells and dumbbells and isometrics and just, you know, all sorts of, you know, there's a little tab at the top called free stuff. So who doesn't like free stuff? So go check that out. And if any of those things seem like they could be helpful for you, then sign up there. And so finally, you can support the podcast and support what I'm doing either by investing in a program from bikejames.com. I've got a bunch of different ones there, including my 40-plus MTB rider training program, or also checking out pedalinginnovations.com and investing in a pair of Catalyst pedals. But either way, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this stuff. And I'll talk to everybody next time.